Welcome in to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. You know, over the years, you find friends, you find good friends, and you find friends that you form long-term relationships with. And I'm glad to have a good friend on the line today and be able to talk with this good friend. We've been good friends with the TAPS para team for the last 17 years. God, it's hard to believe it's been 17 years. And they have been the gold standard when it comes to not just paranormal investigators on television, but paranormal investigators, period. You know, we had Dave Spinks on the program. It was 2 weeks ago now. And Dave said something that is absolutely true. And that is, they do it right, not only when you're with them, but they do it right on television as well. And it comes forward and it shows in the proof is in the pudding. The proof is right there when you watch it on television. And it was a high compliment by Dave that he had that to say, that really TAPS does it right in the field, on television, and it translates. I had the sheer pleasure of watching the season premiere of this new season of Ghost Hunters, which premieres tonight on both Travel Channel and on Discovery Plus. And boy, I'll tell you folks, you're in for a treat tonight. We're going to talk about it with the lead investigator of TAPS, Steve Gonzalez, who's with us now. Let's bring him in now on Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Let's say hello to Steve Gonzalez. Hi, Steve.
Hey, what's up, Tim? How's it going?
I figured I wouldn't go through the whole flowery bio. I think people know you by now, right?
Yeah, I think so. I've been kicking around this town for quite some time. Very lucky and fortunate to still be able to do what we love, you know, investigating the paranormal. And luckily, we still have, a platform where people can watch what we're up to.
Absolutely. And I do want to not only talk about this season, but I also want to talk about the book that you have out there as well, A Life with Ghosts, True, Terrifying, and Insightful Tales from My Favorite Haunts. Sorry, for some reason, I've got the stutters today, so I'll try to kick that before we're done. In my world, 17 years now, I've known you, and I got to tell you, a lot has changed. A lot has changed. I think when you look at those first episodes of Ghost Hunters back on Sci-Fi to now on Discovery, a lot has changed. Technology has changed. The way the show is shot has changed. What do you lend to the success of Ghost Hunters and the continued success of Ghost Hunters? Obviously, there's not a formula per se. Some things have had to change in there in order for the continued success of Ghost Hunters to go on. But what do you lend to the success of Ghost Hunters, and why does it have that staying power?
Personally, I think why it became so successful in the beginning and why it continues, I don't think there's any specific, one reason, but I think a lot of it was that the general public, one, didn't really know that what we did even existed. You know, people like you and I did, because we loved it. We're already entrenched in it. But if you walked around, town or a mall and asked the average person what they think of paranormal investigators, they would probably not even really know that it was a thing, And so I would have a lot of people coming up to me in the beginning saying, I didn't even know people really did this. This is so fascinating. And then on the other side of that, we were investigating, I think, the way that most people would want to investigate. The average person, they would see us, and when they're watching the show, oh, how do they know it's not the wind? And then they see us go check and see if it is the wind. You know, the person sitting at home, that could be somebody outside. They see us on the walkie-talkies. Who's outside? Nobody. We're all over here. We're always checking. And then, maybe the person at home also is sort of like, are they really going to believe this particular ghost story? This seems kind of sensationalized. Oh, they're doing research. They're fact-checking. They're looking into things. They're not just believing that everything is a ghost. And I think in the beginning, that's one of the reasons that people sort of wanted to go along on the ride with us. Season one, I would still, if I was, stopped on the street, hey, you're one of those guys on TV, right? On that show that runs around in the dark. Is all that stuff real? Are you just And it's still kind of like make fun of, you know?
Yeah.
And then into season two, season three, you know, I had people following me at the mall and people in our hotel lobbies waiting for us. And there was a big shift in acceptance. And I think what we did and you know, season one, as you mentioned, in seasons two and three, and they were a different show. You know, they looked a little different. Back then, there wasn't really a show like it. So our crew had to figure out how to shoot it. They didn't know, you know, how do we shoot this? How do we walk around in complete darkness? How do our cameras, you know, so they were sort of not, maybe not inventing, but figuring out how to make the show look authentic to what we do. And it's funny, I watched an older episode not too long ago, and there is some like drama, like reality television drama that mm-hmm. doesn't really exist in the show anymore.
Yeah,
you know, like yep. he said, she said type of stuff. And it's like, whoa, you know, I'm happy that stuff is gone. But I think also, you know, to see that mix, because that was, you know, reality TV was all that,
yes.
you know,
yeah.
And we sort of got lumped into that reality show kind of in, you know, by seasons two and three, you see that leaving the format. And of course, you know, we, you know, I don't want to say cut loose, but, you know, certain team members just, we weren't working with them anymore. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that sort of early drama, you know, just doesn't exist anymore. But it was fun to watch those early episodes. I mean, we all look goofy and crazy and our clothes are all baggy and weird, like, you know, early 2000s style. And,
yeah.
But to see that drama side of it, you know, it was kind of fun. Like, whoa, we were really like that? Weird.
It is kind of fun. It's like going back to the high school yearbook and looking at it and going, wow, can't believe that that happened, but it happened. But it's yep. kind of there for all eternity, you know, for people to go back and take a look. I got to ask you this question, Steve. At what point do you realize that Ghost Hunters Taps is a household name? When did you break that threshold and you went, wow, you know what? We really are a household name. Like, I mean, not just, you know, you kind of get recognized around town, like, oh, hey, I think you're on TV. Like, everybody knows what Ghost Hunters is, no matter where you go.
Yeah, we started seeing that probably, it was around season two. It happened pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, starting to, you know, we were being asked and to do signings at like Comic-Cons and different conventions and things like that. And for a convention goer, you know, that was a lot of fun. I was like, ooh. But I remember seeing a very specific switch where the first sort of 6 months, it did happen pretty quick. The first 6 or 7 months, maybe the first year of doing those sort of things, I would see, you know, a lot of people that you would expect to be into that sort of thing, you know, dressed in black, wearing an Exorcist t-shirt and maybe having, you know, a wolf on their shirt. You know, you could sort of spot the audience. And yeah. It's like, okay, I would have a nice line of people who very much looked like they were, you know, a paranormal investigator or into it. And then all of a sudden it was all mixed. You know, you'd see grandparents and young people, kids all of a sudden. And the whole line would be, you know, you would have college students, you would have parents, families, little children, older people, couples coming saying, we went and got married, you know, at this place because we saw it on your show and all this. And you're like, oh, this is different now, you know. And then I would have people texting and be like, Megan Fox mentioned your show on TV and like things like that. And we're like, oh, these people are watching it too. This is now a little weird, you know. And it took a little time to get used to. You know, I think anybody, yourself included, when people come up to you and say, I really enjoy what you do, you get a little bit of a imposter syndrome. You know, you're definitely like, me? Because I use the bathroom, I play video games, I do everything you do.
Like, oh, yeah.
What do you want to come meet me for? You know, you kind of have to step outside of yourself and just go, whoa, you know, this is happening. This is quite, you know, it still is a little jarring when you're just in Starbucks and somebody's like, hey, you're this guy. This is so cool. Can I get a picture or whatever? And it's like, oh yeah, of course. And it still takes you by surprise. But I saw that switch season two, season three, where all of a sudden it was sort of everybody was into it. And it was a household name. You get, you know, phone calls and messages and emails and direct all that from people throughout your entire life, just being like, my aunt loves your show and I need a signed picture. My aunt, my cousin, my this and that. And you realized, oh, this has become a show for everybody now, not just people who love the paranormal.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really has. And it really has blown up to a point where it's synonymous. You can't say ghost hunters without, you know, without paranormal investigation. They're one and the same. And that's really when, you know, you've broken through and you've become the gold standard of paranormal investigating. I know what you're saying about the whole, you know, people, you know, think, well, you're larger than life. Not that I'm comparing myself to that, but it's the, you know, the whole, what do you say when someone says, oh, you know, I listen to you every day, or I watch you every day, or I, you know, you're part of my routine. It's that, you know, how do you get used to saying thank you? So I want to ask you this. How did you make that transition from feeling like, well, okay, to accepting the love and the flowers and the thank yous? How did it come naturally, or did someone have to sit you down and say, well, Steve, just say thank you?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I think I would have, you know, because you just feel it's like embarrassing and it feels funny, and you, but you want to make sure they have a good experience and they don't walk away being like, I met that guy and he was kind of a jerk, you know. Yeah, but I just look at it like conversation now. You know, somebody comes up to me and I'm happy to talk to them, and just I try to make it more than just a, oh, thank you. You know, like, oh, awesome. What's your name? You know, what do you do? Do you live around here? You know, you try to have a little back and forth. And I think that means much more to both of us than just a, of course, let's take a picture. That's great. And then you walk away. Mm-hmm. I like to make a little moment out of it, not a celebration, you know, I like to get to know them a little bit too, you know, unless. There are times, and I think this happens to everybody, when you really do have to go, you know, you're in Starbucks or you're somewhere and you're going to be late, and somebody wants, and you may not be able to, and that sounds like the craziest thing to say, because you should always get, but sometimes you do have to just.
Yeah, you got to go. And, yeah.
But for the most part, it's, and you always, you know, I started to just tell myself, like, every single one of these people are my friends. You know, maybe not to me, because I don't know them in that regard. I don't look at them and go, John, what's up, man? Hey, how you been? I don't know them that way, but they know me. They're coming up to me. Hey, and, you know, it's my buddy. It's my friend. You know, let's have a little chat.
Yeah.
You know?
And every single one of those person has invested valuable time in getting to know you. And that's what's so important is really we all have a short amount of time on this earth. And they've taken that short amount of time to invest in you. And the least you or I could do is to give some of that time back in return. So that's the way I look at it.
Absolutely. And the stories you hear, you know, they'll make you cry. They really do. Like the families that come together now we're Thursdays, you know, the new episodes will be on Thursdays, but you know, they all come together every Thursday and watch the show together. You have parents tell you it's the only time, you know, me and my daughter connect is that one time a week when we sit down, and then, you know, we talk about the show afterwards for an hour or so, or the next day. And that's really the only time they spend together as a family. And you hear those stories and it's just so like heartwarming, and people, you know, they meet each other over the show. Just recently I had a couple, they were married, come up to me like, you won't believe, they were in the military. And they both had bootleg ghost hunters that they had purchased overseas when they were in the military. Mm-hmm. And they just started talking and they were like, I did the same thing. You did that? So I don't know if it was behind, I don't know how this works, if they were allowed to, but they would meet up every so often and watch Ghost Hunters, and they ended up getting married. Like,
wow.
So they ended up meeting, just talking about Ghost Hunters. And then they found out that they both had bootleg copies they bought overseas so they could watch it. And then like, we should probably watch it together. And then they ended up getting married.
Oh, wow.
So you hear stories like that. And it's just so awesome. You know, it really, any amount of stress which believe me, in television, our hardest day is, you know, not to say that, you know, we're not laying bricks out there. We have it very, you know, but if there's any stress involved or anything, you just have to remind yourself like, hey, you're bringing a lot of a joy to people. People like watching what you do, and let's get this done. Let's do it. Let's go.
That's right.
And yeah, it's really cool. It's you know, that doesn't get lost on me how fortunate, you know, I am to have those experiences.
That's right. As the show is hitting everybody's ears, it's Thursday. So tonight is the big night where the new show premieres, the brand new season premieres. I tell you, I was privileged to be able to get a hold of this show early and be able to watch it. And in fact, I watched it a couple of times. It was that good. And I really did enjoy it. You have a special guest star on tonight's show, Chandler Riggs from The Walking Dead. Wow, you guys came out of the box quick. I got to ask first off the bat, it looked like you guys had a lot of fun with Chandler, and it looked like he was really into it. Now, on the episode, it's mentioned, and Chandler mentions that, you know, he's just kind of messed around with a couple of friends as far as paranormal experiences go. Did he elaborate as to what he's done as far as paranormal investigations off camera?
Yeah, not too much. Sort of what, honestly, kind of where we all start, you know, just a group of friends saying, hey, we should maybe check these places out. And, it, you know, that's what they would do. Just go and have some fun. I don't think they got too deep into it. But Chandler, great guy. Mm-hmm. Honestly, just a fantastic person. And the first time I met Chandler was in 2010, I want to say, or 2009 in Atlanta. It was 2010, I think. Yeah. And it was in Atlanta, and he was just as nice back then. He was super cool. He's a youngster then, you know, small little fella.
Yeah.
And he was a polite, gracious, sweet, kind, and just, you know, you're like, whoa, kids nowadays are so awesome. I was a creep when I was his age. You know? So to see, you know, how he's grown into, you know, an incredible young man has been awesome. You know, we've stayed in touch over the years, and he's always, since the first time I met him, has said that it's a deep interest. When he was younger, it was his favorite show. Him and his family would watch every, you know, every Wednesday and talk about it. And it was really, really cool. And to have him with us was kind of a full circle, you know, moment for both of us. You know, it was something he had always, he kept saying, I can't believe I'm here with you guys. You know, this is crazy. And what I really liked is how serious he did take it.
Yeah.
You know, when we have guests, and it's always awesome. You know, I can't think of a guest that we've had that it isn't, when they go, it's never like, I wish they didn't. You know, they're all fantastic, super fun. But Chandler took it like an investigator. You know, he wasn't just there for the ride and to be with us. And he got into it. You know, he was, he reminded me of Meatloaf a little bit in that regard, like that level of a guest where they're there to investigate. They're there to jump onto the team and learn and figure things out and maybe even continue after. You know, I think Chandler's going to become an investigator, perhaps.
That'd be really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. He really, really, really enjoyed it, had a great head for it. I didn't think everything was a ghost, tried to look into things deeper. Of course, he didn't know the ins and outs of all of the gadgetry. Mm-hmm. But of course, that's what we're there for. You know, let us, you know, do the heavy lifting with that, and we'll teach and guide you as we move on. But it was great. It was fantastic. He did a great job. And quite honestly, I remember, I probably shouldn't say this, I don't know, but there was a moment when we didn't even think he was going to be with us. He had the option, I think it was the next day, to just, you know, go back home or whatever. And he was like, no, I'm staying and I'm going in with you guys. Like,
wow.
And he didn't want to leave. And you know, he could have easily been like, well, my job's done here. I'm going to go home and relax. You know,
yeah.
He said, I'm staying with you guys and I'm coming back tomorrow and we're going to do this. And It's like, whoa, okay. He just had an easy out. He wanted to stay and investigate. And, that's a sign of his character there. It's really cool.
One of the things I picked up from watching the episode, too, is he was not easily rattled. You find that, I think, with people who come into the paranormal world, I think they think that they get a little too hyped, or maybe they're expecting, I don't know what they're expecting. Maybe they're expecting that there's a demon around every corner, or maybe they've watched one too many paranormal shows. The one thing that was nice about having Chandler aboard is he really meshed with the team very well. And one of the things, and I'm not going to try to spoil anything here about the episode, but you guys really, you kind of went back and forth into the Bastille, which is the site that you're investigating in California. And each one of you took a turn bringing him into the house. He was very aggressive about wanting to get, I shouldn't say the house. It was former jail, but you're very aggressive about bringing him in and out with different teams. And there was just no fleeing whatsoever. There was, he was in there and he was active and he was wanting to participate, which was really refreshing. Like you said, a lot like Meatloaf. He was in there and he was ready. I'm wondering, on as far as your opinion goes on this, Steve, do you think it was a matter of suppressing his emotion at the time, or do you really think it was just a matter of he just didn't have any fear of the paranormal?
I think it could be a lot of things. I think he is level-headed, where he's not going to let his emotions overtake him, and he's not going to be like, I think he wanted to maintain a composure and do as we're doing. When there's activity, we may lose our composure with excitement, I can't believe this is happening. Mm-hmm. But we don't lose our composure with we got to get out of here, and I think he was following suit with us, I think he's that way. He's analytical. He's not going to believe it really unless it's happening to him. He wants to make sure that what he's experiencing is as legitimate as he believes it to be. So he's going to look for other answers. And, he would get startled a few times, of course. And, after it's like, whoa, that was pretty scary. With this, you're in the field yourself, Mm-hmm. You do get startled, of course,
sure.
But then it's, where does that go? And for him, just like us, that led to excitement. And it's almost like, I don't want to make this connection because it's not like it at all. But, in police work, you don't quite realize the danger and all of that until after, mm-hmm. You never get tunnel vision because that's when you get in trouble. Mm-hmm. You're always actively listening and paying attention to your surroundings, as with paranormal investigating. It's this much the same in that regard, where it's after you go, whoa, what did we just experience? We could have fallen down the stairs. We could have done, you start to look at all, the possibilities after the fact of what could have happened. And sure, if there's something a little darker there, you got to think about that as well. And it can at times be scary, but the paranormal it does scare a lot of people. But for us, and I think Chandler, it's, you've seen Poltergeist, obviously, I'd imagine most of the audience has, a fantastic movie, but that's very close to what it's like for a paranormal investigator in the real world. When something happens, you look at it much like they do, with reverence. It's like, this should be in a museum. Mm-hmm. It's not something like, oh, get me out of here. It can be that, but and it sounds like a silly, a bit of a silly reference or something to reference it against, Poltergeist, but watch the way the paranormal investigators there act. It's very much like we do. They have a command center. They have their surveillance. They're monitoring. They're using scientific data to back up the claims and the experiences. When something does happen, it's, oh my gosh, look at this. When those apparitions come down the stairs, what are the investigators doing? They're standing up. They're crying because they can't believe what they're seeing. And an awesome part is that one of the scientists, and these are, I think they're depicting actual parapsychologists, not just, you know, investigators.
Right. Yep.
You know. And at one point, he's so excited. He's like, you won't believe it. We caught, I think it was a toy truck or a car, like moving 7 inches over the course of X amount of time, 2 days or whatever. It was fantastic. And he just opens the door and everything's flying around and they just, oh my gosh. And even the depiction of what the family goes through, you know, when somebody has a real haunting, it's hard to maintain relationships. It's hard to maintain a career. It's hard to maintain a daily routine. And yes. You see that through that movie, the beginning, hey, and you look at the dad at the end, he hasn't shaved. He's wearing a robe constantly by the end of the movie. He's downtrodden. He's miserable. And that's pretty close to real life, you know, and, you know, it's more that reverence for it than fear of it. And I think Chandler, for a long answer to a very short question,
you're fine.
I think Chandler falls in line with that kind of mentality where he's looking at it in reverence and not necessarily fear.
That's very cool. Yeah. And it was refreshing to see. I know that it was very refreshing to see. So let me ask you this. You've had one former cast member of The Walking Dead on. Is there one that you might potentially want to reach out to and have on, a second one that maybe is in your wish list that you'd like to bring on?
From Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, Norman Reedus would be super cool. I've bumped into him a few times over the years, and he couldn't be a nicer fella. And he has a bit of an interest in this. I got a signed photo from him once, and he wrote Heart Ghost Hunters and, you know, wrote that sort of thing.
Nice.
And so it's like, you know, he might be into what we do there. And that would be fun to have him along. He seems like a cool guy into punk rock and metal and all that stuff. You know, we'd probably talk about that the whole time. Maybe not get too much done, but I think he'd be anybody, honestly, from that show would more than welcome. Chandler, I know, you know, we've known for so long, it just made sense, you know, and yeah. He's told us, you know, I remember one time seeing him, The Walking Dead was so popular. This was, I think it was in maybe Madison, Wisconsin or something, but he can't walk around. And I remember one time this Lego character comes walking up to me, Steve, what's up? How's it going, man? I was like, hey, pal, nice to meet you. And he's talking to me like he knows me. And I'm like, and then he takes the head off. He's like, it's me, Chandler. Because he can't walk around. People would just hound him the whole time.
You know? Oh my God.
So he's wearing this Lego head so that he can move around. But he made sense, you know, because we always, when we see each other, we connect and talk. And we know his parents, you know, he has a great family. They're all very, very close. You know, they sort of, even his brother, we know his brother, I've met his, you know, chatted with his brother a few times. So we knew he always had an interest. He's always told us that it's something that he wants to do and get involved with. And then the time made sense. You know, he wasn't working on anything. He was nearby, the whole thing. So we're like, let's do it. And he was into it. So we did.
Well, I know this much, just kind of wrapping up a little bit about the Bastille. Again, I don't want to put too much out there about the episode. You want to see it yourself tonight because it is, again, on Discovery Plus, or you can tune in 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central on Travel Channel. It is a wonderful episode. Lots of evidence. And Chandler happens to be in the middle of most of it. And again, Cody and Satori are on this episode as well. And Chandler's along with them when you find a huge piece of evidence. That's all I'll say about that. But yeah, there's evidence galore in this episode. And one of the things I want to ask you too, before we go to break, as far as this Bastille episode, it has to do with the evidence, and it actually has to do with one of the pieces of equipment that's used. And I'm not familiar with it, but it had to do with the footstep monitor or the seismic monitor that you use.
Okay. Yep.
I know that's one of the things that confuses me a little bit in the way that it's used. I know you're monitoring footsteps, but clarify something for me. why and how do you use that particular piece of equipment? What's being done with it that helps you out in an investigation?
Well, for me, how I use whether it's a geophone or any sort of seismic device like that is just for what you would think, vibrations, different rumblings, that sort of thing. And it's more like, at least personally, I use it more as an alert or even to back up experiences. So say Jay and I or Tango and I or Sherry and I are investigating and there is a report that they're hearing footsteps. Hopefully it's loud enough that we can hear it with our ears. And when we do, when we present that as evidence, we can also tell our client, like, and at the same time we were hearing these footsteps, our geophone here was also alerting to the vibrations. And also from a research point of view, it's also letting you know that it's interrupting the environment and not just perhaps a disembodied sound or voice. There's something there because it's not just a sound in the atmosphere.
Okay.
If the geophone is picking it up, then there is a vibration in the environment. So then we know that, okay, maybe it's not a completely residual type of sound, but maybe there is something with intelligence there, actually walking or creating this phenomena. I don't think it's a way for communication, right, in and of right. itself, unless you can recognize a pattern and say, can you maybe tap this object twice and maybe you'll see it flash twice and then you can get it to happen again. Okay. Maybe it'll happen again. And then you can establish a pattern to know that it's not just happening, that sort of thing. But mostly, all in all, the geophone is used anytime that our client or that we think there are footsteps or any sort of, anything that's creating some sort of concussive force that we can pick up with it.
I was also wondering if it's also used to try to debunk a human footstep from, as you were putting it, some sort of spirit footstep. If the levels are different, like if I were to be upstairs from you per se in an investigation, I know you would never do this. You're trying to do a controlled deal where if you and Tango, let's say, are in the Bastille, everybody else is either out in the van or off the premises so that you know there's nobody upstairs. But let's say somebody is upstairs. You would know the difference because the footfall is heavier than, say, a spirit footfall. Does it measure anything like that so you could tell?
It doesn't specifically. It won't say this is a human, an actual like a step in the physical world, as opposed to there's nothing like that. But I see what you're saying, and I think it could help you filter a little bit that way. But if you're an investigator, I really would encourage you to only pay attention to sounds that are happening in your immediate surroundings.
Okay.
And maybe not from upstairs or downstairs. Not that it can't be something, but by the time you'd get up there and make sure that it's not an animal, a person, just some sort of, mechanical something happening, just to make sure what it is, by the time you get up there, it's likely not going to happen again for you to, or maybe it will, I think it's better off to just pay attention to your surroundings and not, worry about sounds coming from above and below. What we do, though, is say we're investigating a first floor. Like you said, we take those filters to make sure, okay, Jay and I or Tango and I, we're on the first floor. So nobody can be on the second floor, or the third floor. They all have to be out. Or they maybe below, where their footsteps aren't going to do anything to us. Mm-hmm. We just have to worry about voices. And if the voices aren't traveling, maybe that's okay. But usually for us, we'll make sure that, we take that out of the equation. And sometimes it's kind of annoying because you may be in the middle of an experience or you may be in the middle of, investigating or even in the middle of saying something like you have a thought and they just come out. You may just start theorizing and then over the walkie, like I'm going up, we have to stay in communication. And so we do. And we'll say, hey, I'm going up to the second floor for a minute to replace the battery pack on this camera or to do this and that. So we keep in touch so that, you know, we don't mistake anything, because you don't know. There are times when we're investigating in a place and, you know, they can come up back stairs and be quiet and try to replace the batteries in the camera without, you know, influencing our investigation. But then we may mistake something, you know, paranormal. Then we get on the walkie and say, are you doing this and that? So it's better just to stay in communication and cut out all of that.
Right.
That's what I would suggest is maybe, you know, not paying attention to the noises that aren't coming from your immediate environment until you get up there. I mean, if you're hearing footsteps above you upstairs, maybe go up there and investigate, you know, if nothing's happening where you are. But if they don't want to do that, I think they probably could, but I think it could get awfully confusing trying to use the geophone to try to figure that out. Like, how would you really know? Maybe if there is a person up there, but they're walking softly, or maybe they're hammering their feet, you know, I feel like there would be too many variables to try to figure it out that way.
Yeah.
But it could be used.
Yeah. When you put it that way, yeah, it'd be a little hard to figure out. Right. You're right. With that, let's go ahead and take our break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming season of Ghost Hunters and what people can look forward to. There's some interesting guest stars coming up this season and some interesting locations. Want to talk a little bit about that? And we'll get into Steve's book that he has out there. He's got a book out there. We've got a link in the description of the show. It's called A Life with Ghosts, True Terrifying and Insightful Tales from My Favorite Haunts. Maybe we'll get a couple of those tales when we come back. Our guest is lead investigator of TAPS, Steve Gonsalves. And when we come back, lots of stuff coming up. We'll talk about the new season, and we'll talk about some of those terrifying tales with our guest, Steve Gonsalves, right here on The Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to The Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. With me is the lead investigator from TAPS or Ghost Hunters. His name is Steve Gonsalves, and he's got a book out there right now as well called A Life with Ghosts, True, Terrifying, and Insightful Tales from My Favorite Haunts. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but we're here today to talk about the brand new season of Ghost Hunters. It's debuting tonight. An all-new episode is on Travel Channel at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. It's also available if you have Discovery Plus. If you happen to be listening to this in the morning, here's a little hint. Just go to Discovery Plus if you have it. If you don't, what are you doing with your life? Go out and get it right now and subscribe, get the app, and go watch Ghost Hunters right now. Bring it up on demand and watch it over and over and over again. And by the way, folks, if you have the app and you want to help out Ghost Hunters with their rating, don't capture it on your DVR on Travel Channel and sit on it for a week. Don't do that. Watch it within, I believe it's the first 3 days after it airs? That's right. So just don't DVR it and let it sit for a week. Watch it within the first 3 days and make sure that Ghost Hunters gets your rating or gets your point. They need your rating point. So go ahead and you can DVR it if you have something busy going on, but then watch it Friday. That's what we're asking you to do. So Steve, this year on Ghost Hunters, you have some exciting locations and you have some exciting guest stars. Of course, you have the Bastille tonight, and you have Chandler on the show from The Walking Dead. Your second show this year, Trapped in Terror, and you're back in California, or you're staying in California, and you've got Dakota Layden on from Destination Fear, now known as Project Fear. But you're going to investigate the Argonaut and Kennedy mines.
Yeah. Yep. quite honestly, is one of the most fascinating investigations I think that we've done. The history there was so just out of the ordinary and inspirational, dark, kind of gross and seedy. It had everything, like in terms of history at a location. It was, I'll give you a very quick briefing.
Yep.
The Kennedy and Argonaut mines. They were two mines very close to each other and connected by some tunnels and that sort of thing. But they were very much rivals, you know, in the gold, in the mining industry there. I don't even remember if it was gold, excuse me if it wasn't, but what, you know, they were, yeah, thank you. Thank you. It was gold. they were not, you know, they were rivals. And what ended up happening is there was a huge fire and it trapped 30 of the miners underground. And the two mines ended up coming together and putting their, you know, rivalry aside to try to save all of these miners. And it was quite awesome to read about and see how not only did the two mines who really had, I mean, there were rumors of murders and like they were going to some, you know, big length to, you know, not destroy, well, I guess destroy, but to make sure that that other mine wasn't going to, you know, be, it was a pretty crazy rivalry. And what ended up happening is the two mines came together, but also the whole town came out and offered all of everything they could to try to save these miners. And sadly, it didn't work. They all did pass away. But ever since then, it created a camaraderie in the town and between the two mines that it was just uplifting to the whole area. And it was really cool to read about and see that the activity that was happening there. Very intense, not to say too much, but I believe we caught an EVP of what sounded like somebody falling and possibly hitting the ground.
Really?
Yeah. And that's something that was one of the claims there. And we were right in the area where it had happened. We believe that we did capture those sounds, which people claim to be hearing with their own ears there. We heard it briefly with our own ears. It was Jay and I were kind of like, whoa, did you hear that? And it sounded like it was coming from right above us. And then when we listened, actually, I think we were doing real-time analysis. If you ever see us, we're investigating and we have headphones on while we're investigating, we're doing real-time analysis. But it's important that there is somebody there who's not wearing headphones because you need to know what's in the environment and what isn't.
Right.
And I believe we heard that live. And then when we played it back, sure enough, the history there is just really fascinating. And as a paranormal investigator, you use all of that during your investigation, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything. To have that, even though it's grisly and you're dealing with people who suffocated, people who lost their lives, people using that in our investigation was valuable. And I think we got a lot of evidence because of it, but that was really fascinating. We did have the Destination Fear gang with us. Always, they're great people. Get along with them fantastically. We're mm-hmm. super good, close friends. Like they're all really, really, really awesome. And it was cool to have them there and investigating with us. They have a different, perspective and way of doing things and self-admittingly, you know, they're, hey, you know, we don't do it the same as you guys. Yeah. But what's awesome is they want to, they're not, you know, they don't look at, say, our tri-field meter and go, I know what that is. I'm going to put it right in you. They're like, oh, what is this? And what exactly? And how can I use it? And what do I look like? They really want to know and absorb, you know, what they don't look at us as like, these guys think they know everything because they've been around. You know, they're like, oh, you may have learned a few things that we don't know. Let's absorb it, you know. And I find that really endearing and cool in younger folks, you know, because I wasn't necessarily that way in my early 20s. You know, I wasn't so open to everything, you know, where they really want to absorb and learn and do it, you know, and it was cool to work with them.
I got to ask you this, Steve. There's certain things I can overcome fears and I can go investigate in places. I shouldn't say fears, but things that irk me a little. I'll put it that way. I don't really have real fears that'll stop me from doing anything. I've got things that'll irk me and make me uncomfortable. One of those things, two things that make me a little bit uncomfortable are situations where I could be trapped. A mine would be one of them, buried alive or drowning. Those are the two things that will get me. Investigating in a mine, does that make you uncomfortable?
When you start thinking about it, yeah, for sure. But luckily for me, it's more heights. So I could be under there and be okay and not let it get to me. You know, it's been here for so long. It's not going to collapse. And, you know, maybe it, I mean, it sound would be awful. Obviously you lose air, that sort of thing, but we didn't go, it didn't bother me. And you know, our team is so, you know, you see on camera, you know, those who don't know us personally, you know, that Jay, he's good at, you know, getting me to face a lot of my fears and but in a brotherly, loving way, you know, getting me to the, for instance, you know, when we did Pensacola Lighthouse, you know, he and I, we went all the way to the top. And I don't know that I would have done that or could have done that if he wasn't right there with me, like, I got you, bro. Next step, one at a time, let's do it. You know, like, very encouraging. And so there's always a level of comfort there where I know that if this is claustrophobic for me and I'm going to freak out, nobody on the team is going to say, do it, you're this and that. They're going to protect me. They're going to be there for me and with me. And just like the same with them, you know, Jay doesn't like bats. It's a real phobia that he has. And he, the same for, you know, he hears one, he sees one, he's ducking, he's grabbing onto me, I'm getting him out of there. You know, the whole thing. We do that for each other when it comes to fears and phobias and that sort of thing. But you, we would shove you down there and make sure send Tim all the way down. I'm just kidding.
Jay does have a way of motivating. He does. I talking to him privately. There's been some stuff I've shared with him and he's like, bro, you can do it. Here's how you do it. And it's just like, after you talk to him, you're like, all right, I'll run through that brick wall. No problem. I'll do it. You know, but it's and he makes it seem like it's so easy too. He's like, what are you waiting for? You can do this. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, I can do it. I can do it. And then you feel stupid that you even brought it up. You know,
we all need those kind of, you could be the toughest guy on the planet, a woman. You could be the most, you know, confident, toughest woman on the, but no matter what, you always need somebody that can help you get over something, right. And you do, no matter who you are. And we all do that for each other. And it comes from love, comes from friendship, comes from learning, comes from past experiences. And you know, we're all in our 40s now. Jay, I think may have just hit the, you know,
the milestone,
the milestone of the, you know, but so you know, you have a lot of life experience behind you and you say, hey, it's not worth razzing my friend because he's claustrophobic in this. Let's help him get through it and be comfortable, you know? And then we can razz them.
Exactly. After it's over, you can give them a little bit of crap, but it's in the moment. You don't really do that to a friend. You just,
of course. Unless it is in, like, because Tango and I, we do bet each other with a lot of things, and mostly I bet him, like, you won't do that, get in there. And you know, we still do that. So there is that kind of razzing where it's like, you won't go in there. No, I won't. $50, you might. Nope. $100, nope. You know, eventually he might cave, and that's kind of the fun. But I have to really be like, I really do pay up, because I get that question a lot, like, that's all for camera, right? It's like, no. If I get up to $250, I may not want to give him, obviously, but if I don't really pay, then there's no incentive for him to really do it. And then it's all just like, I know he's going to say no, you know?
Yeah.
So like, why even try? Like, now at least I know he knows that I'll pay. So there is a real bargaining there.
Wow.
And sometimes he does try to give it back or not take it, you know, cause he doesn't really want to, but I won't let it happen. It's like, no, these need to be real. And you need to know that I am going to pay you so that you'll actually do these things and not just say no right at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way of accountability. It just is. It just is. The next episode after that, episode 3, is the Hoover Dam. The one thing I love about Ghost Hunters, when you're in the family, you're going to come back eventually, or you're going to come back in one season or another. When you're at the Hoover Dam, you bring back Dustin Perry and Chris Williams.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which is awesome. Dustin has always continued to investigate with us, you know, and, he's you've met Dustin, obviously.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. And,
couldn't find a nicer person. He's been a close friend, all of our, and you know, we started investigating with Dustin for people who watch during episode 1 of season 2. So he's been with us for a long time, And he's somebody that we love and respect. And whenever we need more hands, he's there, you know, and, you know, of course it seems like it's a great thing for him, you know, he gets awesome, but you know, he has a family, he has a life, he has two careers, you know, that aren't Ghost Hunter. And he has to, you know, weave all around that and somehow work all that out to come with us for a week or two and all that. So it's very gracious of him to give us that time and that sort of thing. But it's great. And Chris Williams, you know, she's somebody who I didn't know if we would investigate again with, not because we didn't want to or whatever, but she sort of, you know, washed her hands of the paranormal in that regard. Yep. She had said, I'm no longer investing, you know, she ran into some troubles with people in this. I'm not saying anything she hasn't said herself. So this isn't me, you know, but, you know, had some encounters with fans and people that really soured her.
Yeah.
And she, you know, wasn't into what, you know, we were doing all that much in terms of the TV world and as much as we were, because we are, you know, when we're filming, we're investigating and going, you know, 6, 7, 8 months straight, just going and going. And you get a few days off here and there, but it's not for everybody. You know, it really isn't.
It's true.
So when, you know, we had talked to her about investigating again and if she would be interested. It was so awesome, you know, and it was cool, too, to see her and Jay, you know, reconnect, because I don't think they had talked in quite some time. So that was awesome. And just it was like, and this wasn't the first time she'd come back. You know, she'd come back and investigated with us last season. And it was like no time had gone by. We were all just laughing, telling stories. She jumped right back into the team. Like, I mean, there was, we had new equipment that she hadn't seen, you know, she's like, where's what is, you know, and she's always been that way of, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm gonna, you know, she doesn't need much tutelage. She's a very independent person and investigator, but she's open to being like, I don't know how to use this anymore. What is this thing? Like, where, you know, where I need some, you know. And that was actually kind of funny to see, because she's very astute when it comes to that sort of thing. But yeah, it was actually awesome to have both of them and have them together there. It was really cool. We do have a great team and a great group of people that we all really do love each other and get along great. And it's really, really awesome.
I'm looking forward to seeing them on that Hoover Dam episode. Yeah.
Hoover Dam episode. That was when they told us, that the opportunity, you know, because it hadn't been investigated before, you know, and that if we would like to, that they would welcome us to investigate, you know, they called us the Hoover Dam.
Really?
You know, like, whoa, and it's a government facility, you know, we had to really be. And when they started telling us the stories, you know, we're walking around with, you know, the essentially the government. And he's like, yeah, right here, a guy fell, and because 100 people died during the building of the dam. That's just during the building.
Wow.
And one guy fell and he hit this ledge right where I was standing so hard that his skin stayed up on the ledge, but all his guts and skeleton ended up on the ground. Like, he hit so hard that everything just came out of his skin, and he was in two separate areas. Like, his skin was somewhere and everything else was somewhere else. Like, those are the kind of deaths that you're dealing with there. They're really awful and grisly.
Oh.
And being in that place, like, at all hours of the night, being in places that people don't get to go, you know, it was really fascinating. It was one of my favorite investigations. The activity, like, we really awesome. Yeah.
Looking forward to that one. That's for sure. Wow. Wow. Next episode is Mansion of Misfortune. You're going to Alabama in a mansion there, and you've got Satori and Cody back with you. And again, they, for listeners that aren't familiar, they have a way of speaking to spirits that will absolutely blow your mind. You'll see it tonight. And I'm hoping we'll see it in that episode of Mansion of Misfortune.
Yeah, you know, I don't. I know they used it, that technique.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the evidence that came out of it. I do, obviously, the Bastille we probably shouldn't mention.
No, we won't.
They uncovered something pretty awesome there.
Yeah.
They were with us at this house here, that the Moody Mansion. And you know what's interesting about what they do is it's something that we've all kind of done as investigators. You know, trying to get interactions through raps and responses and sounds, and we all do it, but we don't do it necessarily the way that they do. You know, we're asking for, you know, very grand things. Close a door. They're saying, hey, let's identify a letter. You know, if we can identify a letter, maybe we can then get to a couple letters, identify a couple letters. Now we have a word.
Yeah.
Let's get that word in the sentence. And they sort of build that sentence through those raps and different sounds that they're hearing. And it's kind of interesting. It really is. We try to back it up with some practical evidence and equipment and that sort of thing, as they do as well.
Right.
We sort of look at it as a little tool, in our toolbox. Hey, let's see if we can get some results with that technique. You know, it's a technique they have a way of doing it. And it's pretty interesting.
It's very interesting. I was blown away, especially in that first episode. Unholy Matrimony. Of course, Dustin comes back for that one. Dustin Perry comes back for that one. The Myth of St. Ignatius is the next episode after that. You've got Tori from Mythbusters coming back, and you go to Colfax, Washington, and go to St. Ignatius Hospital.
Yeah. Investigating a huge abandoned hospital that is supposedly haunted, asylums, all of that, you can't have more fun as a paranormal investigator. You know, you're exploring, you're running around this place and you're experiencing things. It's like you're a 15-year-old and you it's just so much fun. You feel like a teenager. You really do. And Tori, you know, he's somebody that we've known for a long, long time. I met Tori in 2005, and we became instant friends and stayed friends, and just our friendship just grew and grew. And we would have a little bit of, because we were the same night, the same time slot, but different networks, and we shared somehow the same audience. And it was the same thing. It was, we would, bicker back and forth, like, who's going to win this week? Like, your ratings, you beat us, you son of a, we had the same audience. They would either watch our show, DVR Mythbusters, or they would watch Mythbusters, DVR our show, and we would hear it all the time. But we stayed friends and still all the time, and he'd always wanted to investigate and work with us. But we, it's fun to have guests, but we sort of want it to make sense and have it be right for the investigation.
Yes.
And with Tori, it made sense, to use his scientific background, his methodology, his way, he's a non-believer. He doesn't believe in the paranormal. He is a skeptic. And we wanted that, to help us disprove things, to even fact check our own, what we're experiencing. He may, hey, listen, that's a little, but what's really cool is, him going in to work with us and test his own limits and to really dive in and see, he may not be a skeptic anymore. He may, and he wasn't a skeptic in the sense, because, a skeptic is a non-believer, but a skeptic has an agenda. They don't believe, and they're trying to get other people not to believe. That is a skeptic.
Would that be, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, Steve, but is that more a cynic than a skeptic? Because a cynic, you look at James Randi. James Randi was a cynic. He was dead set against, would not change his mind, and thought there was no such thing. He would call it woo-woo. And the perfect example of a modern-day cynic would be Penn Jillette. Penn Jillette's a definite cynic. Would you say Tori is more of a cynic or a skeptic?
I'd say more a skeptic, because he wasn't out there saying you shouldn't believe. Okay. He just had that mindset of, are you guys really, I need to see that myself, and I think he did. I think he walked away with having some really intense experiences that you know, he wasn't sure he would have. And it was really cool to see. And, you know, we're friends. So after the cameras, you know, we're in the hotel lobby, me, him and Tango, just being like, yeah, that happened, huh? And he's just like, I don't know what, like, I didn't come in expecting, you know, I came in to, you know, have a lot of fun and experience this and investigate and see if it's a world that I'm can really dig into. I didn't think it may change my thoughts and beliefs there. So that was really cool, but it was great to have him there. And you know, it's a huge place. We actually needed the extra hands. So yeah, it came in quite useful.
Wow. Generations of Ghosts is the next show that's up. It's the second to the last episode of the season. You're out at Rosemont, which is a former cattle and thoroughbred farm and plantation in Gallatin, Tennessee. And then the season finale is the Diocese of the Dead, which you're in Ogdensburg, New York, and investigating what was once a church rectory. And Jason's son, Austin, and Dustin Perry are with you on that one. It sounds like you saved almost the best for last there.
That case, yeah, I think people will really, really enjoy that. And having Austin with us was really cool. He's always been interested. And I tell you, there would be times when Jay and I would come home, or he would go, you know, I would drop him off at his house after an investigation. This is before Ghost Hunters, when we were, you know, TAPS, the team investigating. And his kids would be, you'd see the lights on, in, you know, or not light, but you'd see all the lights off and just like flashlights going around the house. And they're investigating too. You know, like they can't go to these, you know, places like his dad would, like, mm-hmm. you know, but they're having fun in the house as like little kids. You know, it's what dad's doing. So we're doing it too. You know, in Jay's head, it's like, oh boy, now I got to put them to bed. You know, they're still awake. But in my head, I was like, oh, that's cute. Look at these guys, you know, like doing what dad does. And so to have him out there with us, it was a cool moment, you know, and he got a little bit of a trial by fire. You know, he had been around a few, like what we call home cases. We have the TAPS home team, and, you know, they deal with most of the cases right in and around New England. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had been out with them a few times, but never on the level of, you know, a televised investigation where you really need to, you know, because if you're investigating, you're setting up, you're talking, you're having fun, you're doing it. But when you only have an hour and a half, because you only have an hour and a half, it's a little more like, get them, where are these wires? We got to hold you, you know, get it. Because there's no, like, you know, the longer we spend setting up, we're not investigating, yeah. you know, so yeah. we want to set up and get in there as quick as we can. And so he had a little bit of a trial by fire, but it was really cool to see him investigating and using his brain in that way, because, you know, when you're investigating the paranormal, you do need to think a little differently. Your brain needs to, you know, connect to a little different level of, you know, the average person isn't just walking around talking to thin air in the dark. You know, it's a different thing. Right. And it was cool to see how he sort of dove into that world. And he may join us again. Who knows?
Do you feel like Austin emulates his father's style, or does he have his own style when it comes to investigating?
He has his own style. Yeah, for sure. I think he will develop his own style. Yeah. Jay obviously has that. You know, it is or it isn't, it's there, it's not, the disprove, you know, he's one of the people who taught me, you know, in the earlier days, I was a little more open to a lot of the evidence and a lot of the experiences. And he was one of the people that taught me, like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's take this another level or two, just to make sure, like, let's go back the next day and make sure it wasn't, you know, the swing upstairs moving, you know, it's just, really, let's dig in. Let's really make sure, you know, and I think Austin may be a little more open to experiences and things. So they may have a different style in that regard, but I think Jay is likely going to do most of his training, you know, and when it comes to equipment and techniques and methodology in our world. So he'll probably investigate much the same way.
I'm excited to see Austin on camera. That'll be a fun episode. That's the season finale. Again, folks, tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central on Travel Channel. But by gosh, if you don't have Discovery Plus, again, I don't know what you're doing. You should get Discovery Plus. and see it early. See it during the day to day. And then if you want, tune in tonight and watch it again. Give it a double dip. It's well worth it. Like I said, I've watched it a few times now. And I love the episode. Again, Chandler Riggs from The Walking Dead is the guest star there. And Satori and Cody are back as well. I want to talk a little bit about the book, Steve, if we can, for a little bit. Sure. Let's talk about A Life with Ghosts, True, Terrifying, and Insightful Tales from My Favorite Haunts. Let's talk a little bit about the motivation behind the book. Why did you want to write this book, and what did you hope to put out there about your life in this book?
Thanks for asking. Well, the book, it serves a few purposes. You know, it widely or mostly is what the subtitle is. You know, they are tales from some of my favorite haunts around the country and things that stuck with me. You know, it's not necessarily the most haunted places or the most terrifying or any of that. But the stories and my experiences and, you know, these places would all sort of poignant things that have happened. And the book, what I found quite interesting is I wanted to also remind people that we have all of these experiences and all of these as paranormal investigators, and we are really, you know, investigating and going after these things. We want the ghosts and the evidence and all of that. But one thing we forget about is that, you know, they were actual people. People with lives, you know, with loves, with losses, with tragedy, with all of that. And I wanted to honor that a bit as well and you know, pay homage to those who came before us and really allowed for us to do what we do. So I do go into the history of these places a little bit as well and give you a little background and dig into the individual people that we're actually going after here. But then my experiences, say we're at you know, Birdcage Theater, mm-hmm. investigating. It is my experiences there. What happened, what I experienced, how we went through it, what's going on in my head during that investigation. And then, of course, everything around it that people may not know. For instance, a grisly story where Tango and I were driving down the highway after investigating the Birdcage Theater, and we came across a dead body. You know, it was really awful. Like we didn't even know what to do. And because how we saw it, it was this dark, menacing smear in the highway. And we were both kind of like, it's like 3 a.m. We don't know what to do. And then we noticed all of a sudden that there was like these yellow intestinal tubes. And we're like, oh, and then we literally saw a hairy chest. Like we could see the hair on a chest. And then we could see the legs, and then we realized, like, oh my gosh, that's a smashed person.
Oh,
it was awful and terrifying. So, you know, they hear a little also of the, you know, what you don't know is happening. Like, you don't know that when, you know, we left the Birdcage Theater, we came across this crazy, and, you know, a lot of cool stories in that regard. But mostly it is, you know, what I experienced through my, you know, through my eyes, in my head. During all of these investigations and my favorite, and it's also things that I've learned, you know, little life, not life lessons, but I've definitely learned a lot about living, you know, through investigating and you're able to, you know, learn from the past in terms of, whoa, I probably shouldn't do this in life because I got this guy killed, you know,
yeah.
Or I probably shouldn't, you know, you just learn a lot, but by and large, it's what people would expect it to be, you know, just these haunted, not places, but they are, all these stories do obviously take place at my experiences there and my favorite experiences there and why I find myself going back to these places. And it really is a very cool read, and I think people will like it.
Let me ask you this. You know, we all get into paranormal investigating for one reason or another, and it turns out as you do this throughout the years, sometimes your motivations change. So I'll ask you this, Steve. What was the original reason you got into paranormal investigating, and now it seems like throughout the years, maybe that reason might have changed. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But now, what do you find you get out of paranormal investigating?
you know, what I get out of it is, in terms of personal, is has changed a little bit. It's the same and it has changed. For instance, I still get the excitement and the feelings, and you know, you want to have all of these. Even when we're disproving things, you in your own head, you're like, "Gosh, I'm really going to disprove this. I want it to be a ghost so bad," you know. But then you go through it and you disprove it, and that even becomes exciting because you figured it out, and you're like, "Okay." And sometimes that is exciting as well. But that, you know, ride of the excitement and having those experiences, because you know, being in the world here, that when something legitimately paranormal happens, your body freaks out. You know, you get excited, you get sad, you get weirded out. Your brain doesn't know how to compute it. It's like, this shouldn't be happening, but it's happening, and you don't know what to do. And you really find yourself in all these different emotional states. And then when you look back at it, you realize how fun and awesome it was, and it keeps you moving and all of that. But, you know, now I think it's shifted a little more towards where you're actually, you know, helping people. It's always been our sort of, you know, mission and what we do. And you know, we choose our cases based on certain things, if we have a lot to choose from. And you know, children, is there people that really need help, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it is I don't want to use the word fulfilling, but it's a great feeling. And it's not always, you know, you're not always helping people with their ghosts. Sometimes it's with other things. You know, there's a story in the book where we're investigating a place, and, you know, there came a moment where, you know, we were interviewing this couple, and they kind of looked at each other, and the wife said, you know, this is really, you know, bringing us together, you know. And the husband was kind of like, what do you mean? Like, I feel like it's pulling us apart. Like, this is putting a wedge in between us. He's like, no. Like, we're, you know, battling this together. This is a togetherness. And you saw like the realization come over both of them and be like, oh, we've been looking at it differently the whole time. Hmm. And now they're looking at it the same way. And quite honestly, we still hear from them. They're like, we've never been happier. Like, for the years they've dealt with that, one of them, it felt like it was bringing them together. But then you have the other person being like, this is putting a wedge in between us. This is, and then when he took a moment to realize, like, oh, this is a common shared thing that we're fighting together. We're both going through this. We're both trying to figure it out. It really did bring them together. And that was awesome to see, you know. And so you're helping people in a lot of different ways. And it may not always be that, you know, you're helping them with their ghost problem. It could be other things, you know, but helping them with the ghostly phenomena, you know, on Ghost Hunters. There's a case where a gentleman, and on Ghost Nation too, a show with mm-hmm. travel, you know, but there is a case on Ghost Hunters where a guy was literally not staying in his own house. He was staying in a trailer on property because he was so terrified of what was happening. And sure enough, after our investigation, after we, you know, presented him, and we didn't help him by getting rid of the ghost. We helped him by just understanding what is there, maybe even who is there and why, that sort of thing. He felt comfortable, and we were getting messages from him years later saying, I can't believe I'm living in my house. I sold the trailer. I'm in there with my wife and kids, and I love life. And before we got there, he was living in a trailer and felt disconnected from life and society, and was really at a bit of a crossroads in his life. And, you know, did we help him with his ghost problem? Yeah, we did. But we also helped him, you know, it sounds corny and weird to say live a better life, but realistically now he's living in his house with his wife and his kids. He's not living in a trailer and, you know, because he's too afraid of his house, which he did for years. And I think, you know, my focus is shifted more towards that. Like, I would rather that than get a great piece of evidence that's going to change the world. I would rather just help one couple or one person, you know, feel better about them, that sort of thing. So I think the shift is there.
Does that psychology come at least the base part of that psychology, does that come from your former career as a police officer? Do you get some of that from that? Or is this more of a feeling? Does that inspiration come from somewhere else to help somebody through that ghost problem?
You know, I don't know about the ghost problem. I think that being a former police officer definitely helps my investigation, you know, my skills there and not taking everything at face value and you know, looking at things in a different way. And I think also, and this sounds kind of weird, but being able to pick up on maybe when people are being honest and not being honest, you know, you get a lot of that training in police work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're kind of able to see, and, you know, the client might be exaggerating this story a little bit, or maybe they misinterpreted their experience and we need to look at something else. I think it helped in that regard. And with police work, you know, you do get those same feelings when you're helping people. It's indescribable. You know, people really, they're only calling you at their worst times. You know, no one's calling the police, "Hey, I'm having a great day." You know, it's true. The worst time they're ever having. They're calling you. So you're going there expecting to be, you know, yelled at and having people just, that's what you expect. So when it's the opposite, and you do get that feeling of, wow, I really made a difference in somebody's life. And quite honestly, that's the way I think most police officers, obviously there are a lot who get no enjoyment out of helping people. They'd rather just, you know, swing their battle axe around. You have those too. But I think by and large, most police officers do get a great feeling when they make an impact, a positive impact in someone's life. And they take great pride in being the person that somebody calls that they help. My training officer, amazing woman, her name is Barbara. She had told me much the same, that there's no better feeling in the world when she sees the look in the eyes when she gets there and it's a true call for help. And she goes in that door and the person who called, she sees that look of relief and like, oh, somebody is here that can handle this. You know, there's no better feeling to her in the world, you know? And I think a lot of that, you get some of that in paranormal investigating. Also, you get a lot of that feeling of, whoa, I really did, you know, make a difference here in someone's life. And it can be as silly, but even just correcting history for people. You know, this woman had thought that she was being tripped by a ghost, and because she had heard this story that a woman had tripped and fallen and had never gotten help and passed away before help arrived. And so she had thought that this ghost was trying to do the same to her, trip her up, you know, because she had fallen there a few times. And we had sort of thought maybe it was a little more psychological, you know, maybe because she heard of that, thought that, thinks that, it just, she may trip herself up a little bit and not even realize it, you know, maybe not. But through the history, we found out that the woman that she thought never passed away there on that spot. Actually, nobody ever passed away in the house, not in modern record keeping. And that the woman that she had heard actually passed away a few hours away in a hospital. And ever since then, that phenomenon doesn't happen anymore. And she loves it. She told us, she's like, "I haven't fallen in those stairs in 2 years since you told me that." And it was happening every couple months to her. So she realizes herself, too, that it probably was just a little more psychological. Huh. Because she knew of that story. You know, if anything happened around those stairs, maybe she just said, "Something's trying to trip me. I'm terrified." You know, and now she realizes, like, maybe that's not what's happening. And so you are, when you're helping people, you get a great feeling from it. And, you know, you don't want to do it for that feeling, but that feeling definitely becomes a part of what you do.
Very interesting indeed. It's the human mind's a wonderful thing, but at the same time, it can also trip you up in so many different ways. And
yeah, big time.
When we get inside our own heads, it's a scary thing. It really is. Last question here, Steve, and it's this: what do you hope by the time, and God forbid this ride doesn't end soon, we want this ride to continue for a very long time, but what do you hope that the legacy of Ghost Hunters is at the end of this thing? keep in mind, we want it to go a lot more seasons than this, a huge amount of seasons. We want it to go 20, 30 more years. I don't know if you want it to go 20, 30 more years, but that's beside the point. But what do you hope the legacy is at the end of this thing?
You know, I think legacy, I just hope that people say when it's all said and done, there's never a, you know, this, we're 20 years out, you know, everything ends at some point in time, that people look back on it and say, hey, you know, there was a group of guys and gals that were interested in the paranormal and, you know, had a very fortunate turn of events that led to a television show. And, you know, they wanted to present them or their field in the best way possible. And they did so while helping people and really opening the eyes to a lot of people. I think the biggest, I guess, legacy our show would leave is that we opened the doors to a lot of people to experience the paranormal, you know, who otherwise probably wouldn't have, may not have tuned into a show about the paranormal, may not have ever come. We don't know. If our show didn't happen, maybe the paranormal wouldn't have caught on and become as big as it is. Or maybe another show would have come along like it eventually and it would have happened anyway. I don't think we'll ever know. But I would hope that the legacy is, hey, you know, they brought the world of the paranormal to a lot more people than, you know, there ever was before. Because you were there too. You could go to, you know, a paranormal conference and there's 15 people, 20 yeah. people, and they're all from a little regional area. There was, in the whole country, maybe 5 or 6 teams, you know, in there weren't many, you know. There was International Ghost Hunter Society, you know, there was Spirit, TAPS, of course, DC Metro. There were a few, but it was like regional, you know, maybe 10 tops in the whole country. Yeah. And now, you know, every town has a team. Every state has many teams. You know, it's everywhere. And I think that's pretty awesome that the awareness is there and people are getting a lot of enjoyment out of it and life out of it. You know, I talk to people who are just jumping into the paranormal world at, you know, 60 years old, and they feel like they have a whole new lease on life. They're having fun. They're investigating. They're meeting up with people. They're making new friends. They're like, I'm leading a whole other life I thought I would never. And it's all because, you know, they found interest in the paranormal and decided to seek out like-minded people. And I think that's cool too. If our legacy is any of that, I'll be quite happy.
That's awesome. The new season of Ghost Hunters starts tonight on Travel Channel, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central. But by gosh, you should have Discovery Plus already and should have already watched it by the time you've heard this. If you don't have Discovery Plus, you can. We'll have a link in the description of this program so you can get Discovery Plus and you can watch it before it airs. I know I've seen the episode, tonight's episode, already a few times, but I'm going to go to Discovery Plus right now and watch it myself another time. But again, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central Time on Discovery Channel. The book, by the way, that Steve has out right now is called A Life with Ghosts, True, Terrifying, and Insightful Tales from My Favorite Haunts. We have a link to that as well in the description of this show. Steve Gonsalves, thank you so much for being with us once again here on Darkness Radio.
Thank you, Tim. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, my friend. Folks, want to remind you that this weekend, Beer City Bruiser will be out wrestling. You can check that out at darknessradioshow.com/events. We have a link there so you can go check him out live and in person as he defends his championship in North Carolina. I'll be at KNSI Radio. I'll be on the air Saturday from 7 to 9 a.m. I know it's early, but you can get up and listen to me, can't you? Also, I want to remind you with the weekend coming up, be sure to take care of yourself and each other. Do something nice for somebody, whether you're helping them out. You know, there's a lot of heavy snow still out there this weekend. I know in the northern states, we're expected to get more rain and snow this weekend. People still need warm clothes as it's still freezing up here in the north. So be sure to be able to contribute to somebody out there, help them out, whether it be with a little bit of cash, maybe some warm clothes. Spring is still cold up here, folks. It's 31 degrees as I'm looking at my stuff here in Minnesota. Do a good deed for somebody this weekend. Be sure to leave this world a little bit better than you found it. Just a little tip from your buddies here at Darkness Radio. Got a great week of shows next week for you. Thank you so much for being a listener of Darkness Radio. We love you and appreciate you, and we'll see you next week for the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.